people knew that 8:30 was not my agenda time, but somebody else's. Behavioral and social sciences and education, did I get all the words in the acronym? Barbara?
Let me thank all of you for coming. For all of us, our time is our scarcest resource, and I realize that it's an important donation for me. What I want to do briefly is describe to you what processes is that you're stepping into. This was actually the National Academies of Sciences were started under Abraham Lincoln, actually, in the middle of the Civil War. What he did was the Union Army was building an iron ship, and the big scientific question was, were they going to be able to get the ship to float? They were thrilled that when it did float, they jumped inside and realized that their compass didn't work. And when you are fighting a war between the North and the South, you want a working compass. So Lincoln said, get me the best scientists in this country and figure out how to make that compass work. The answer I know is that they did figure it out, but I don't know precisely how they did. And Lincoln realized that this was a wonderful, the scientists were willing to work for free. This was a wonderful potential boon to the new republic. And he asked a second question after this stunning success. And the second question was, should the United States change the metric system? And the answer was, yes. You can see that we have mixed successes with our studies. And I have to tell you, I became very interested in the history of this thing, that the third study is still in review. So it's not every study is a success, but we have actually improved our batting average over the years. What happened, of course, is that as soon as people realized that scientists were willing to volunteer their time to help the government, that the questions, of course, multiplied. And by the early 20th century, the scientists were saying, look, we're willing to volunteer our scientific evidence. We're not willing to volunteer our administrative time. And you need a permanent infrastructure to help this process. And that's when the National Research Council was established. We who work at the National Research Council are here specifically to help facilitate your process, to make it as efficient as possible for you and for our sponsors, actually. Let me tell you what we do so that you know how to use this and for our sponsors how to use this also. The first thing we do with when there is a potential new study like this one is we spend a lot of time with sponsors and interested parties trying to negotiate it into something that is actually will take good advantage of the scientific information as well as something that will be very useful to sponsors. And that often is a negotiation. You're looking for that subset of things where you can make a major contribution and help the sponsors themselves. And let me just briefly give a word for our sponsors. I have now realized, having been here a while, that our sponsors are the bravest people in Washington. And the reason for you all who are not from Washington is that the sponsors actually ask a question for which they don't know what the answer is going to be. And they will actually put their resources into finding that answer and knowing that you all are independent and actually will in fact make an independent judgment. Lots of people in Washington ask questions where they already know the answer. And this is a unique process where they, the sponsors will get more than their money's worth from you, because it will be completely independent. But for them, you should appreciate that it's a little nerve-wracking to not precisely know. But when we get that, the conception of your of the work focused and negotiated, we then have to go look for the right staff to facilitate this process. And in this case, you all are very lucky. We have your most our most experienced study director, Paul Stern. It is this. Study is being done under the board on behavioral cognitive sensory sciences, which is Chris Hartel, and the Committee on National Statistics, which is Andy White. You've got a very strong infrastructure for the study. Paul doesn't study, so we'll be able to devote 24 hours a day to this. And I do want to mention Susan McCutcheon in the back, who's the research associate. She's also very important, as is Cecilia Rossiter, because if you're not nice to them, they you will not get fed. So you will also not only not get paid, you will not get fed on this. Once we've got, we can see, we get staff together, we then have to think through the membership of the committee and the chair. And this is, we can really go off track on this one if we don't get this right. Let me just say, you're a wonderful group. We've spent a lot of time putting together the right group. Often what people do is they come up to me at the break and say, I don't know why I'm on this committee. And I will say, you know, this is, what we're doing is we're putting interdisciplinary groups together. We want a wide range of opinions and ideas, and if we do that well, you'll learn a lot as well as people will learn from you. More often, I have to say, if they say, I know why I'm on this committee, I don't know why that guy is. And, but you will find out in this discussion. We've got you the best chair. Steve Feinberg has been a wonderful citizen of the NRC, and now is, of course, a terrific citizen of the National Academy of Science, and is interested, and so that we feel very fortunate. Let me briefly tell you about this process. This really is a process. It's a group process. It is hard to have groups. You know, all of you have done your own research. It's very easy when you either have only yourself or a co-author whom you can bully into doing something. In a group, you have a very different dynamic. And I will never write this up, but what is clear to me is that many of these groups go through the same issues. And the biggest one I'd like to alert you to is that your middle meeting, no matter when that middle meeting is going to be the low point of your process. If you are likely to become clinically depressed, that's going to be the time. And one group came up to me after I sort of had observed this for several times and said, you know, we have figured out how to get around that. We're canceling the third meeting. And let me just say, it did not work. The problem is writing a report by committee is just very difficult. And everybody has to pull together. That third meeting, you don't see how you're going to get it done. Since I have been here, we have never not produced a report. So you should remember that, and we will help you get over that meeting and meet all of our deadlines. This study is on a very tight deadline. This report needs to go into review in less than a year from now. About 300 days from now, the report needs to go in review. That's tight for a committee. Committees aren't perhaps the most efficient way to do this, even though you're likely to come up with something much more original than if any single person had done it themselves. Once you go into review, there will be a very extensive review process. It is the most withering review process I have ever seen, actually. We've all used to having review processes of our research and our publications. You would likely to have 15 reviewers for this report, and we have to respond to every question. Steve? Oh.
No, Jeff is coming down the hall.
And we will have to respond to every one of those review comments. However, I have never seen a report come out that has not been approved by this process. So, once you take a big gulp, go through the reports, it will improve. It will improve your report a lot. And finally, when the report comes out, we will work hard to be sure that it gets the visibility that it deserves. You volunteered your time. It seems to me it's our obligation to be able to give you to be sure that your time is well spent on this, and for the sponsors too. We'll do extensive briefings for sponsors, for everybody, anybody who wants it. This is going to be a very important study, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of interest in it. Anyway, we're going to be here to help you throughout this whole process, and you should use this any way you can to make this work better.
Okay, thank you. So, do I know why I'm here, I guess? I do know most of the people here in the room. I'm a statistician. I think my primary qualification is I have never worked directly on anything that relates to this topic. And usually people say it the other way around, but that is, I believe, one of the reasons that I'm here at the table. I am at Carnegie Mellon University in the Department of Statistics and as acting director of the Center for Automated Learning and Discovery, which would love to analyze polygraph data where it's available, I guess, because it sounds like exactly the kind of non-traditional forms of data that many of my colleagues have interest in. We do not have all members of the committee here, although we have the majority, and I thought as the next part of the process, we would quickly sweep the room, the table for the committee, and have them introduce themselves in about that amount of time, and then turn to the rest of the introduction material.
I'm Patricia Grant. I'm in biostatistics at the School of Public Health, University of Minnesota. I have minimal experience with polygraphs.
I'm Jim Blaskovich, professor of psychology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I do human psychophysiology and virtual reality research. Not trying. I have done nothing directly related to polygraphs.
I'm David Fagman. I'm a law professor at the University of California at Hastings. I have a graduate training in psychology, a master's degree, and of course a JD. And I have never done specific research on the polygraph, but I'm an editor of Modern Scientific Evidence, and we have a chapter on polygraphs.
I'm Richie Davidson. I'm at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and I do research on brain mechanisms that underlie emotion. And I've been interested in the polygraph, but I've never done research explicitly on the polygraph.
I'm Andy White. I'm director of the Committee on National Statistics, one of the two standing committees that are co-sponsoring this study, along with the Board on Behavioral and Cognitive and Sensory Science. A relatively new name. We are looking very much forward to working in an interdisciplinary fashion with this, and we hope that not only can we contribute as data specialists, but statistics is not just data, it's also about the structure of reasoning.
Could you
you. We'll come to our guests in a moment. Chris?
I'm Chris Hartel, and I'm the staff director of the Board on Behavioral Cognitive and Sensory Sciences.
John Swetz, chief scientist emeritus at a company called BBN in Cambridge, which grew out of MIT quite a long time ago. I've been interested in the evaluation and the enhancement of diagnostic systems generally, and have looked at a number of diagnostic systems, from medicine, weather prediction, aptitude testing, clinical psychology, and including the polygraph lie detection. Written kind of a general review, which looks at all of these as similar kinds of processes.
I'm Kathy Lassie, the adjustment manager. I'm a professor of systems engineering at George Mason University, and my main research area is probability models and artificial intelligence applied to problems like sensor fusion, intelligence analysis, and military problems primarily.
I'm Mark Rakel. I'm a neurologist by training. I'm a professor of radiology at Washington University. For all of my scientific life, I've been involved in issues related to brain imaging and studying how the human brain works using functional imaging techniques. My current interest is the interface between cognition and emotion.
I'm Pete Emery from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where I'm jointly appointed as professor of statistics in the statistics department and professor of biometrics in the Department of Medical Information Science and also in the Department of Community Health. My research interests are in discrete data analysis, survey methodology, and epidemiologic research methods. But my primary research activity these days is collaborative research in biomedical and health science problems. I share with the many of the other members of this committee profound ignorance of polygraph methods that I hope will be helped by this activity.
I'm Paul Stern. I'm the study director for this committee. By training, as a social psychologist. But I've been here at the National Research Council for a long time, worked on a variety of projects, and you know, sometimes it might be hard to recognize my background.
I should note that three committee members have been unable to attend, either because of conflicting commitments or health reasons. But at some point during the meeting, we're hoping to hear from them on the speaker
phone. From two of them,
from two out of the three. And the three missing people are John Cassiopo from the University of Chicago, Paul Ekman from University of California, San Francisco, and Dick Schifrin from Indiana. So, to the charge, this is going to be presented
by John Gordon. You have,
we've
updated the agenda.
Oh, okay.
The one in the book,
yes.
That was a week old.
I knew that I had the other one for a reason, more than one reason. This is a committee that has received its mandate for activities from the Department of Energy, and we're fortunate to have with us General John Gordon from the National Nuclear Security Administration to describe our charge from their perspective.
Thanks, Steve. Thank all of you for taking this on. I can guarantee you it will be interesting. I can probably guarantee it will be very complex. And I can guarantee that it will be filled by a number of folks that you visit with considerable emotion. And in fact, it's actually that we try to get under is the emotion that surrounds us so much right now. I'm particularly delighted that Senator Freeman who could join us today. He's long interested in this subject, which has been in many issues. And Pete Lyons from Senator Minch's office as well, both a strong supporter of what we're trying to do in the National Security Administration and the Mexico delegation. And again, to try to understand how we strengthen security in our business and still, in fact, do our business. So in fact, the Academy and the Council should take this on. It's very important to us. And as you say, we may not know the right answer. We may not know the answer. We hope to be able to know the answer as well. This is important to us, and I would comment that the new secretary, Spencer Abraham, has even commented upon this. His confirmation hearing is the importance of his place on this, and he's part of his evaluation of these matters as well. I am the first administrator of the National Nuclear Security Administration, which was created 6 or 7 months ago, with the intent of pulling together into one organization, probably some shorthand of the military, related nuclear activities of the Department of Energy. So our job is to strengthen the stockpile and maintain a safe, reliable stockpile of weapons. At the same time, work aggressively in the non-proliferation area to reduce the threat from that perspective as well. And again, and thirdly, to provide the nation, and particularly the United States Navy, with reliable nuclear power plants. So it's a mission that kind of encompasses all things nuclear, all things nuclear and military that fall within the Department of Energy. And we came to this organization, I came to this organization, the organization stood up about 6 months or 7 months ago. And the first set of issues on the plate, and perhaps even those that contributed significantly to the formation of this agency, were lingering, and not lingering, but very specific and immediate concerns about security within some of our facilities. And those, while we have made significant changes, improvements, and I believe strengthening the infection, at least stopped the downside and morale that was going on in some of these facilities. We haven't exactly turned it up yet, but that's put some stability into the system. And now it's time to go on from there and see how we strengthen the organization across the board and how we are going to both do our job of science and the polygraph used as a screening tool has become literally a hot button for many all around the country. The prospect of being subject to a polygraph exam by individuals who have served their country in a class in a role with a security clearance for 30 years doesn't sit well with them. They don't understand it. They don't understand why they're being asked to do it. Some think that there's been some sort of a breakdown in trust when we make these suggestions. And they've raised concerns about the validity of the polygraph and whether or not they might falsely be identified based on a faulty examination or faulty process or poor science. At the same time, I think there's some folks who are so committed to trying to do this that they probably have lost some of the activity as well. And again, what we want to try to do is get under this emotional issue of whether everybody needs to take polys or whether we're offending somebody by taking polys and making sure that at the same time they have the best procedures and understanding and science behind it. It's obviously been in common use among certain federal agencies for decades, some scientific research and discussion for many years. And the task that we've asked you to undertake, which should be an important contribution to the understanding of the polygraph, in particular the way that we use it now within the National Security Administration Department of Energy, and that is as a screening tool. That's where I hope that your focus will play on that area, and less so on trying to get underlying when it's used in specific against a specific case for specific issues of criminal investigations and the like. You have proposed an extensive literature review, including the 83 OTA assessment and all. But I would suspect you will find that the research on the specific question with respect to screening tool is not as broad and as deep as you might think. And so you'll struggle a little bit, I suspect, to find a really solid, at least extensive research in that area. Again, let's perhaps even more important, that why we really need to get into the objectivity of this issue and get beyond some of the emotion issues. Look at, and as you bring these issues, these scientific studies into that, please take a look at the objectivity of the studies and reviews that have gone on in those studies themselves. There's also, you may find that there's a little bit more detailed information on some of the specific issues of medication, sleep deprivation, and illnesses. I hope you can find a little bit more specific work on that, perhaps a little bit more well understood. But we need to bring that to the fore so that we all understand and get it on the table for better involvement. You've asked to look to review other techniques that may be applied to similar purposes. I think that's great. We would hope you'd again just do your normal job and look at those very carefully so that we understand how we would actually implement them and how they would play off against the polygraph if there was such a thing out there. Other research papers, I think, are also a positive thing to move forward. The commission knows it will be a bit of a challenge, I suspect, to replicate laboratory settings and how these are sort of actually applied. But again, I think you've got the right people, the right expertise with the statistics and the other approaches to that. It is a complex organizational process. The tools are not used as standalone single test tools. It falls in part of an overall organizational issue. You might think about looking at where you have a legal representation of an organizational psychology to add to your group. Put that out for your consideration. And again, look at the whole study. We'll look for promising areas for future research, like the poly screening program and other techniques for detecting deception. So we look forward to the study. We look forward to the ability of the council to dispassionately and objectively assess the validity and utility of the polygraph that uses a screening tool in this particular case. It would be a benefit to the department and to my agency. And I think you need to keep in mind that while we're the sponsor of it, this will be a public report, and so it could have some ramifications that go beyond the Department of Energy. And so I think I know you're planning on doing this, but when you reach out and talk to the experts that conduct polygraphs and run programs across the system. I would particularly refer to the Defense Department's program and would encourage you to visit with them and perhaps visit their locations. And again, comment that a lot of changes have been made in programs and how they're implemented since 1983 in the study, which we tend to reference. And again, I would urge you to sort of get into that and come out and see how the programs are implemented. Come out to the Albuquerque program or the dealing program is run from and take a look at that side as well. In short, what I'm really asking is you do what you would normally do and what the council is known so well for is to do the objective, cold scientific analysis and the security and counterintelligence are absolutely vital to the mission of my organization. I can't compromise on that. This is not designed to be an attack, and it can't be designed to be seen as an attack on the polygraph program. I need a polygraph program, I think, that burns this, that is doing it right, with respect, spending early, with the right dimensions to it, with the right understanding of it. I need quality people. Can't be running them off because if we're running a program that's not understood well or is not, you're not able to explain the scientific basis well. But I can't compromise either. I can't compromise mission. I can't compromise security. And that's why this is so important to me. I think that's probably the basic comments I'd like to make at the beginning. I would tell you that we have one other activity going that may have some intersection with this. We have asked CSIS under the leadership of Dr. John Hamry to do a study on science and security, and we're looking for the intersection of science and security. Again, sort of the question I alluded to earlier, can we do good science and can we do good security at the same time? Too many people, in my opinion, have said talk about the balance between science and security. And the concept of balance to me implies that I would trade one off for the other. And in the business that I'm in, I don't want to do that. I don't want to make a trade-off. I don't want to think of it in those terms. I think it's a polygraph in the same sense. I don't want to get in a situation where I have to diminish the quality of the quantity of work I'm doing, in order to maintain a high certain level of security. And I don't want to imply that I will reduce security in order to be able to do the work. So I think we can do both. I think we need to do both. And this will be an important contribution. And it's a long way of getting around to saying there may be some intersections with John Hamry's organization that would encourage you to pursue those. In my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So much.
Center for Strategic and International Studies. It's a major.